From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
You know, we have been following the Stetson Bennett story for a few days here. This is one of those things that, you know, mainstream media, you know, TV, radio, things like that, probably not paying all that much attention to a third-string quarterback, former preferred walk-on, a guy that really spent 2017 as the scout team quarterback for the Georgia Bulldogs, but people who are more plugged in, and that's what a Dog Nation Daily listener and viewer is, someone that's very plugged into the program. Obviously, we all have the awareness of what Bennett actually brings to the table for the Georgia program, both in terms of what his value was a year ago when he was the scout team quarterback, universally praised by the defense for helping them get ready, especially in that run-up to the college football playoff, emulating Baker Mayfield during Georgia practices. A lot of those Georgia defenders were really, you know, congratulatory of Stetson Bennett for the work that he was able to do there. And then when you start transitioning to 2018, there was also some thought that it could be a bit of a transition for Bennett himself, more than just the scout team quarterback, maybe at some point a scholarship quarterback, and maybe a guy that, as the third-string quarterback at UGA, had a chance to also see some time on the field, given, you know, the way that college football can kind of be a funny sport from time to time. In fact, if you want to go back to the beginning of the spring, you know, Kirby Smart made it very clear that he really viewed Stetson Bennett as a pretty intriguing prospect, and Smart has always had plenty of good things to say about him. Here is an example.
I don't know. I think last year, you know, with no Bryce, you felt like there was not a three there evident. I think Stetson, being that he's done what he did through fall camp, the season being a scout team guy, and then the bowl practices getting to work, I feel like we got three guys there that are really competing and doing a good job.
I've played that audio before here on Dog Nation Daily, and what I kind of be fascinating about that is that, you know, when Kirby Smart's essentially asked a question about probably Jake Fromm or Justin Fields, the truth is I don't remember, he ends up going to a conversation about three quarterbacks and at least, you know, in some form includes Bennett into the same conversation as Fromm and Fields, two former elite prospects coming out of high school, two guys that would really have their choice of any college program they want to play for. You know, he kind of puts Stetson Bennett into that same group there, which gives you an idea of how Kirby Smart thinks about Stetson Bennett. But as you know, other people thought highly of Bennett as well. Bennett probably started to think highly of himself too, as he saw himself playing well during practice. And I'm sure he said, if I'm doing this well as the scout team quarterback, imagine how I could do as some other team's starting quarterback. You'd only be human to allow that thought to sort of fester in your mind a bit. And on a recent edition of Towers Take, Chip Towers sort of just put it out there that there was a very good chance that Georgia was going to lose Stetson Bennett. Here was Towers then to sort of set us up for where we are now.
Is Stetson Bennett transferring? He's obviously contemplating that. He's discussed that with Kirby Smart, according to several published reports and some of our own intel, Jeff Sintel and I. That's not a small thing. You know, a lot of people shrug that off. Third-string quarterback, big deal. You know, we have Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, that's what people are going to say. But, you know, three quarterbacks is the minimum that you need.
Yeah, three quarterbacks is the minimum that you need. And if one of those guys, Fields or Fromm, were to get hurt, and let's face it, in college football, that's always a possibility. All of a sudden, that third quarterback being a guy that you feel okay about putting in the game, that becomes a pretty important thing. And with Stetson Bennett deciding to transfer, that's obviously, you know, going to be an issue. And before that decision was ultimately made, Kirby Smart told us last week that he was doing everything that he could to find a way to keep Bennett into the fold here. Even the possibility maybe of a scholarship, Kirby Smart said they were working to try to find a way to keep Bennett on the team. Here is Kirby from Columbus, Georgia.
We need to keep Stetson there and help us. We don't really have many other guys beyond Stetson. We've got two young quarterbacks coming in. They're going to be walk-ons that we think are good players. But we've invested a lot in Stetson with the development he took this spring, where he did in bowl practices, and excited to see what he can do. And we're encouraging him to stay so that he gets that opportunity. But I certainly respect what he's done this far for the University of Georgia. He's a really good student as well, so we're selling him on the University of Georgia education.
In the midst of that same conversation, another reporter, I believe it was Jason Butt from the Macon Telegraph, asked Kirby Smart, does that sort of intent to get Stetson Bennett to stay, does that mean offering him a scholarship? And he said that's certainly on the table. Didn't commit himself to saying he was doing it, but did mention that was the kind of thing that had been discussed. But ultimately, one way or another, good reporting from Jeff Sintel the other day lets us know that Stetson Bennett has decided that his best football is to come somewhere else. He's going to go junior college for a year, then look for a college home beyond that. And my guess is, even though Bennett doesn't have all those measurables that you would expect a quarterback to have, not quite as tall. He talked about that with Dog Nation when he first made the decision to come to Georgia as a preferred walk-on, that he'd always been sort of hearing that knock about himself. But nonetheless, Bennett has decided to transfer, and Georgia is without a guy that was really helpful to the team a year ago as a scout team quarterback and potentially could have been helpful this year as a number three quarterback, a guy that would have likely played some for the Dogs this season. And to give you a sense of just how significant this loss is sort of viewed to be by some within the Georgia program. Remember, as we said, Stetson Bennett, not necessarily a household name for a lot of people that sort of only follow mainstream media, that don't follow Georgia football as closely as many of you all do. But inside the Georgia program, this is viewed as a pretty big deal. Case in point, if you're watching, I want to show you a tweet here from Georgia wide receiver Mecole Hardman. And if you're listening either on the radio or on the podcast form, I'll describe it for you. You see the Jeff Sintel tweet there, breaking reserve quarterback Stetson Bennett IV has made up his mind about his future at UGA. Obviously, we click in the story to find out that he's going to transfer and move on. And Mecole Hardman Jr.'s tweet in response to that, one long no. Real long no with the sort of sad face emoji there. So clearly Mecole Hardman kind of weighing in on what he views as a bad loss for Georgia that Stetson Bennett's choosing to transfer. And I guess, you know, as a way to sort of sum up this entire conversation, you know, somebody the other day in the comment section, I can't remember if it was here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza or if it was over there on SEC Country Live, but somebody said, hey, if I'm Georgia, I'd much rather have this quarterback problem, trying to figure out who your number three quarterback's going to be, than a situation like, say, at LSU, where they're still trying to figure out who their starting quarterback's going to be. And that is true. There's no doubt that's true. You would probably file this one under good problem to have. The two quarterbacks ahead of Stetson Bennett are so impressive that he views his best chance of playing to be somewhere else. You would probably file this under the notion of good problem to have. But just because it's a good problem to have doesn't mean it isn't still a problem. And we are only a Fromm or Fields injury away from this actually being a bit of an issue for Georgia here in 2018. I mean, ultimately, what sort of happens to Stetson Bennett here, I think, is the same thing that's going to happen to all quarterbacks. Quarterbacks in this day and age want to play. And I think that the transfer rules, especially given the fact that Bennett's not on scholarship, the transfer rules being, you know, somewhat less restrictive now and the mood sort of moving even more in that direction of these guys being free to go where they want, I think that's good for the players. I hope that Bennett goes on to play well. But for now, what Georgia has to think about, though, is what does exist with this program? Beyond Jake Fromm, who's a very good-looking starter, and Justin Fields, who's maybe the most dazzling backup quarterback in all of college football, what's next behind that? Well, that's a question we may be working a lot this summer to try to answer. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Thanks so much for being with us. No matter how you get to us, whether you watch us on video, Dog Nation Facebook page, Dog Nation YouTube page, we've been on the Dog Nation Twitter feed. We're glad to have you on video and good to be back with you after spending some time with family and friends yesterday. Also fun to be back on the radio again today here on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We were upended a bit last week because of the baseball schedule. More on the baseball team, by the way, coming up in just a moment. But for now, it is good to be back here on the radio with our friends in the Classic City on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref and in podcast form wherever podcasts are found. Apple Podcasts, Android devices, SoundCloud, the world-famous DogNation.com. We're just glad you've checked out Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza today. And speaking of Marco's Pizza, they invite you to get your authentic Italian-quality pizza from Marco's and say hello to sauce inspired by the original Giammarco family recipe. Because when your founder is from Italy, you do things the Italian way. Order today at Marco's.com. True story, had a little Marco's Pizza on Saturday, and it was good as it always was. I love that authentic Italian recipe. I love those three cheeses blended and melted on the top, and I do like that original Giammarco family recipe on the sauce. Always fun. My family loves it, especially my son and daughter. I'm just the biggest hero in the world when I bring that in. So really thanks to Marco's Pizza for being a part of our show and also being a part of our weekend, virtually every weekend around the Adams household. All right, we'll get Jeff Sintel coming up in a moment. It is a Tuesday. That means it's Marlowe's Tavern Tell-All Tuesday here on a Dog Nation Daily. A lot of UGA recruiting stuff to get into with Jeff. Jeff, as I said, also had some really good reporting on the Stetson Bennett situation, so it obviously makes sense that we'll also talk to Jeff a bit about Stetson Bennett here in a moment. Unfortunately, though, something else that we'll have to talk to Jeff about is another player that Jeff was following very closely on the recruiting trail for quite some time, and that is Georgia defensive back, former high school quarterback, former Auburn commit, Trey Bishop, who was really a pretty impressive win for Georgia in that 2017 recruiting class. And it was really one of those moments when we started thinking, hey, this Georgia class is really going to come together, and Kirby Smart is really establishing himself as a UGA recruiter when you pull Bishop away from Auburn. You know, Auburn was kind of doing that thing where they're saying, hey, come here, you might can play quarterback. Georgia was making the more of the, I think, the accurate pitch of come here and see if you can make a future for yourself as a defensive back. And at the time, that looked like a very big win. Of course, not all recruits pan out and work out quite the way that you want them to. For a Bishop, it's both on the field, maybe now, and off the field. We'll get to the on-the-field stuff in a moment. As far as the off-the-field goes, as many of you are probably aware of, Bishop was charged with a felony here over the course of this holiday weekend. I'm going to try to keep this as PG as I can, but he apparently filmed a young lady without her allegedly without her consent, was also accused of sort of passing that film around Athens here a bit. So that is obviously a very, very troubling situation for Trey Bishop. And it really calls into question a football career that's also, frankly, you know, not been all it was cracked up to be or all it was supposed to be on the field either. I mean, if you want to go back to earlier in the spring when Kirby Smart was asked about not just Bishop but a whole host of 2017 defensive backs, Georgia signed a lot of guys at that position group as a part of the 2017 class, and some of them, Latavius Breeny and Trey Bishop and others, just hadn't really distinguished themselves too much. So with the dark cloud of legal trouble, felony accusations and felony charges facing Trey Bishop, you sort of mix that into a conversation where it's sort of uncertain about what his level of contribution on the football field was going to be. And in fact, here is Kirby from back during the spring sort of talking about what he wasn't seeing at the time from Trey Bishop and one of his teammates, Latavius Breeny.
Learning progress. He and Breeny both. Those are two guys I challenge every day. I mean, if you go ask them, I know y'all don't talk to those guys, but they probably wouldn't like me right now because I'm riding them. And our depth at safety is a very serious concern, and they are part of that depth. So they're not ready to play yet. And I don't necessarily think they should be ready to play, but I think they should be on their way because where they were unique last year, you didn't see them play, but they took a ton of reps in practice. And the growth hasn't been what I want to see out of he and Breeny. So I challenge them every day to, are we going to get where we can trust you to put you in the game? Because you're one play away. And we're not where we need to be there.
So, you know, you have sort of two intersecting stories here. On the one hand, for Trey Bishop, you've got an allegation that if it's true, he's going to regret for the rest of his life here. A very, very serious thing that is going to be very hard for him to live down. He's going to have a life filled with regrets if the allegation against him is true. But that's more for him to deal with personally here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We've never really apologized for the fact that we are obviously a football-centric show. So when it comes to stuff like this, as serious as the felony charges are, that's not a crime beat show. We are honestly more interested in the football part of this. And for Trey Bishop, you have to wonder if anything for him as a football player is going to fall into place here, if it's just not meant to be for whatever reason, which kind of goes back to what we've said over and over again here, which is that the number one goal for recruiting is to recruit in large numbers, to bring in a multitude at every position group, because for different reasons, some guys just aren't going to pan out. Now, we'll let all this play out with Trey Bishop, and we'll obviously give him a chance to, share his side of the story, share his facts, and share, you know, all of that, and obviously, you know, see where all of this goes. But for now, this is another example of why it is that you recruit such large numbers, because for every kid, it's just not going to work out the way that you want it to. And right now, Trey Bishop, more examples of it not working out for him at UGA than there are examples are of it working out. But as we said, we'll kind of see how this plays out. We'll also get a thought from Jeff Sintel on this coming up as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all here in just a couple of moments. Let me take a minute, though, to sort of pivot back to better news, good news here for both of the Georgia spring sports teams that a lot of you are having a good time following right now. It was not a good SEC tournament for Georgia in baseball. They do go 2-and-out, but that 2-and-out does nothing to harm the NCAA tournament seeding for Georgia baseball here. I think most of this is going to be by virtue of the fact that the Dogs took 2 of 3 from Arkansas, who is a favorite for the College World Series at the end of the regular season. Ultimately, the strength of that gives Georgia a chance to be the number 8 national seed. They're going to host a regional starting on Friday. Georgia will play Campbell, Troy, and Duke also involved in this Athens regional here as well. And, you know, kind of an interesting, I guess, somewhat controversial deal that Texas Tech, I guess, had leapfrogged Georgia in the RPI. They're 8th, Georgia 9th. but Georgia gets the seeding advantage over Texas Tech for this. So that's kind of an interesting thing here. Georgia looks to be able to host throughout the run of postseason play here in baseball, which is good news. And even better news maybe right now for the Georgia softball team, which takes care of business against Tennessee in sort of an exciting SEC-themed super regional. And now the Georgia softball team moves on to the College World Series. And how about this one Friday night? Kind of a scheduling quirk that both the Georgia baseball team and the Georgia softball team will essentially play at the same time. But Georgia softball gets to open the College World Series against Florida. And here on Dog Nation Daily, where we always say a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost, what a great chance to express that here coming up at the end of the week as the Lady Diamond Dogs, I guess we're going to call them, move on to the College World Series and hopefully get a chance to knock off the Florida Gators. So congratulations to both those spring sport teams, and it's fun to be able to talk about that here on our program. For now, though, let's get ready to turn our attention back to UGA recruiting. Interesting stuff in terms of the Stetson Bennett transfer, how it impacts UGA. We'll deal with the Bishop stuff as well, but then we'll turn our attention to some better news for the 2019 class as well as we welcome in Jeff Sintel, and it's good to have you with us as well.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And as the Marlow's Tavern tell-all gets cranked up here on this Tuesday, we'll get ready to welcome in Jeff Sintel, who even on the holiday weekend was grinding away a lot of camps this weekend, got some really good quotes that you no doubt have already read as a part of the Sintel Intel at DogNation.com, and you will be reading it in the days ahead there as well. And as our Marlow's Tavern tell-all begins, I'll remind you that you can become a Marlow's Insider. Find out about the exciting things happening at the Marlow's closest to you simply by texting the word Marlow's, M-A-R-L-O-W-S, no apostrophe, just M-A-R-L-O-W-S, to 24242. You can become a Marlow's Insider today. Jeff Sintel, happy holiday weekend to you. Good to have you with us here on this program, and hope in addition to the recruiting stuff you're doing, a chance to spend a little time with family and friends. I saw some of you on social media. It looked like y'all were having a little bit of fun.
we had some fun. We had an outdoor, we have glow-in-the-dark shuttles now in our neighborhood, and we had an outdoor badminton tournament that's probably, I don't know, maybe the badminton course is probably, I don't know, maybe half the size of a tennis court. So that was a lot of ground to cover in bare feet. But we chopped wood, man. We had a good time. And then actually some great friends of ours came through with Braves tickets yesterday. And
nice.
We saw the opening game to the Mets series and that walk-off home run. So my son Kyle was pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, our buddy Michael, one of our producers, is a big Mets fan. He's the exact opposite. In fact, he's giving me the thumbs down right now. I don't know how it is here on our program. We can never get any Georgia fans or any Braves fans. It's like everybody that's ever worked on our show like is very passionate about rooting for other teams than the ones that most of us root for who are either speaking to the microphone or listening, but that was quite a day. So you're telling me you weren't there for like the 1:45 in the morning finish for the nightcap last night. Is that fair to say?
No, it was one of those best things where you had a good friend say, hey, I got a pair of tickets. Can you get there? And you're like just happy to be with friends. And it turns out you are behind the Mets dugout, but I think we were 8 rows up. So it was a great Memorial Day. I looked at my son and I said, man, why don't we just do this every Memorial Day? And he was like, that's great. But I will caution you, when you go to a Braves game with a youngster, I think I make more trips to the concession stand then the Mets pitchers got visited by mound visits by their pitching coaches yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that was
listen,
a long day.
Jeff, listen, who are you telling? My family, and my son thankfully does enjoy going to baseball games, but part of getting him to enjoy it, and my daughter too, is those frequent trips to concession stand. It ends up being both time-consuming and kind of an expensive day there, and there's nothing better with being with family and friends like that, and obviously Stetson Bennett at Georgia also has a bunch of good friends, but he's decided that maybe a chance to play in the future is sort of better than the bonds and the friendships he had there at UGA. You had some great reporting on this. Bennett's been a guy that you've brought a lot of profiles about here on Dog Nation over the course of the last year or so. What were your thoughts on Stetson Bennett's decision to play his next chapter of his football career somewhere else?
Well, first of all, I think Stetson, this wasn't an easy decision. He told me a story pretty vividly of how he's up in the rafters in swaddling clothes and maybe a year old for his first game at Sanford Stadium. And let's do a quick poll, Brandon. He said he's probably can count up to at least 100 Georgia games that he's been to in his life, especially the ones as a player last year. And now that's a pretty stout number. Everybody does the math. You got to give about 7 years straight to every game to click off 100 Georgia games. or then even more impressive, it would be 100 games in Sanford Stadium. So that's about 15 years worth of work right there. So huge Georgia fan, man, but he just kind of, and when you talk to him, Brandon, he kept saying us and we when talking about things, and it seems like he wants to play. That's the dream now, is to play. And I think a lot of times, Brandon, that dream was fueled by the fact he did so well against Georgia's first-team defense last year, but then he saw the hurdles at the depth chart with Justin Fields and Jake Fromm, and he thought, you know, I need to go see how good I could be. Players need to play, and I fully expect him to do well at his junior college stop in Mississippi and then return to major college football somewhere. And I was talking with another beat writer about Stetson the other day, and I'm going to set – the ceiling. I mean, I'm going to set the bar. Everybody knows the term about the scouting ceiling. But I'm going to set the floor for Stetson. I think he can be maybe not the exact production at the exact levels, but I think he's going to remind folks when he gets his shot, because he's elusive and accurate arm, big-time arm, actually throws a very good deep ball. I think he's going to be similar and play similar, not the same type of player, not the same type of success maybe. He's going to look a lot like a Johnny Manziel or a Baker Mayfield when he gets a shot. Now, he's about 6 feet and about 180 pounds, but will he hold up in big-time college football? That's a question there. But the main thing there is Stetson Bennett moves on from the Georgia program, and it leaves Georgia down to just two scholarship quarterbacks and really two proven quarterbacks on the roster right now. And there'll be a chance for guys like Matthew Downing, the Alpharetta walk-on that's coming in this year, to really try and basically bolster Georgia's quarterback depth chart, because they're going to need a lot of arms to throw to all those receivers in camp.
Can I drill down on one aspect of your reporting on this that I thought was really interesting? And, you know, from the perspective of a guy that would kind of like to have found a way to keep Bennett, I guess this is a little bit frustrating for me, that there's that one section from your article, and I'm going to paraphrase this, and I may paraphrase it poorly. I'm going to try my best not to, that I think Bennett alluded to you to the fact that Kirby Smart never came right out and said, hey, here's a scholarship if you choose to stay. And you kind of write that, and that's probably because it wasn't really about a scholarship for Bennett. It was about wanting to play. And what's kind of, I guess, from a Georgia fan's perspective, a little bit frustrating for me is I have said, unless I thought Georgia could get Ryan Helinski, I would take the scholarship that Georgia has partitioned off for 2019 quarterback. And I just flat out say, hey, take this scholarship, be our number three. If I'm Kirby Smart, I'm saying that, be our number three, and let's just see what happens here over the course of the next 2 or 3 years. But it sounds like, according to your reporting, that conversation was never as explicit as that. What would have happened if it had have been that explicit?
Yeah, that's the great point there. I think, to me, Brandon, I think the handwriting was on the wall when you saw the G-Day reps, and you saw, I think, Stetson threw about 9 or 10 passes compared to Fromm and Fields. Both throw, got over 30 reps and 30 times they got to spin it around. I thought that was a very telling. And the reason why I feel, and I asked Stetson about this, is was it ever directly on the table? And he said he just kind of alluded to it. But the both of them just had a concern about Stetson wanted to play. So I don't even think, hey, here's a scholarship, was going to matter. Remember, Stetson was on an academic scholarship anyway with a 30 on his ACT. So for him, it was all about the chance to play. I think the only thing that Kirby could have put on the table, excuse me, Coach Smart could have put on the table, would have been the ability to say, okay, we're opening up the quarterback competition this fall, and we're going to split the reps among the three guys, and we're going to figure out who wins. Of course, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever, given what Jake Fromm did last year, leading Georgia so far, so deep, so long into the playoffs. And remember, 24 touchdowns, I think 7 interceptions, 2,600 yards, 62% completion rate, and then you've got the nation's number one dual-threat quarterback in Justin Fields with his own special set of skills that also comes into the fold there. I just think that was something that Stetson looked at. He also looked at the fact that you know, Jake Fromm's about 6'3 now, about 225. Justin Fields is about 6'3, 225 as well. Those guys are, you know, in the strength and conditioning program. Big difference is there is Stetson is about 6 feet. I think he's grown a little bit since he's been at Georgia, at about 100 to 185 pounds. That's just not going to cut it with holding up in the rigors of the SEC. And Stetson, very smart kid, thinking about being a lawyer one day. Just saw his best move to make major waves in college football still And it wasn't going to be at the most, I think, along with what Alabama's got cooking, the most talented depth chart in the country.
It's a Marlowe's Tavern tell-all here on this Tuesday here on our Dog Nation Daily, and it's good to have you with us. And Jeff Sintel rolls on right now. By the way, don't forget, if you want to become a Marlowe's insider, text the word Marlowe's to 24242. You can find out about special offers and events taking place at the Marlowe's closest to you. It's the best way to keep up with everything happening at Marlowe's, and pretty soon you'll be just as big a fan of Marlowe's Tavern as Jeff and I are. And no really good way to transition here to a much darker, potentially more sinister story, but what happens with Trey Bishop over the weekend facing a pretty serious felony charge here? And, you know, Jeff, I don't know how well you remember this, but going back to that recruiting cycle of 2017, Bishop was actually a guy we talked about a lot. That was a what I thought at the time a pretty big recruiting win here for the Kirby Smart camp here. And one of the things that let you know going ahead to have the program like Auburn and getting Bishop that Kirby was really going to flex his muscles, but both on and now maybe off the field, just not working out for Trey Bishop, is it?
Well, I thought you were going to go with your quarterback thoughts there, Brandon, because he was rated as a quarterback at one time as an athlete. He played quarterback for his high school team. Basically ran a lot of the read option stuff. But Bishop is a guy, and I think this is one of the things you saw the immediate reaction come out with a statement from Coach Smart. Wanted to let the student judiciary matters and let the policies work with his rights as a UGA student first before they started thinking about anything else. And I mean, he's a guy. Everybody, you know, you cross-reference a guy in the 2017 class. It's about time for those guys to really start making plays because they've been on campus long enough. He's fast. I think he's a 4.4 guy, about 6'3", about 205 pounds now. Checks off a lot of boxes. Would definitely be a special teams monster for Georgia again this year at the least. But now he's got to get through this matter a little bit and see where he winds up because, I mean, a lot of people think about Trey Bishop in the absence of a guy like D'Angelo Gibbs. And can he make a move? Did he make a move? Bishop is a guy, South Georgia. Remember, he was a big flip, eventual flip from Auburn. And Bishop, you know, this is the type of thing you don't like to see. And I just kind of cross-reference this. The main thing I always try to stress in my reporting, especially to Georgia fans, is perspective. The month of May has passed. The boys are all going to be back on campus soon. You're going to see within the next week a lot of optimistic messages on social media where all the new Bulldogs will be coming in the fold. I think everyone's going to arrive probably this week, heading into like June 2nd, June 3rd. Most of the class will arrive by then. I think that's the remaining balance of that 2018 recruiting class. 17 guys are expected, and that'll start to feel more like football season again, and Georgia's got a heavy camp session this week. They got guys coming in to throw, Joe Yellen, the big arm out of California, the four-star quarterback who came for G-Day to check out Georgia. Well, there's going to be a lot of seven-on-seven camps over the next few weeks, a lot of lineman camps, a lot of team camps this week. And I fully believe that all those kind of offers where Georgia kind of likes a guy, they're going to watch them all throw and figure out maybe who were their top quarterback targets, their real top quarterback targets left for 2019.
All right, since you opened this door, I'm going to walk through it. You talk about guys starting to arrive on campus. Are you ready to talk yet about anybody who may not be here by the end of next week or I guess by the end of this week, or is it too soon to talk about that kind of stuff yet?
Oh, it's very too soon. I remember Nyquan Johnson showed up about a month late last year. He ended up just fine. And, you know, there's different guys that have to come through their processes. And, I mean, to me, as kind of a veteran reporter when looking at this type of stuff, it is not uncommon for at least 2 to 3 guys to have to wait through maybe qualifying, clearinghouse, or whatever when they get a late score and late qualifications. Remember, a lot of their grades are just kind of coming through and were posted late last week. Everybody remembers stories like Brian Herrien of guys who came into the Georgia program a little bit after or right when they got finally qualified and everything else. So I think the worry button for that one probably doesn't need to get pushed until mid-July at the earliest.
We talked about Josh Beck a lot when you were with us here on Friday. We don't need to talk necessarily a ton about him anymore. But I did see where he had some quotes to the state, Phil Kornblut, who covers recruiting up there, saying, this is Belk, that he really wants me, meaning Kirby Smart. They signed 2 defensive tackles in the last 2 years. With me coming in, they plan like some 3-gap, 4-gap with my versatility. I can play any of those positions down there. That's Josh Belk talking about his UGA visit. I mean, anything new on this? It seems like he's probably getting pretty close to a decision here. Is this still a deal where the Gamecocks are just a pretty big point spread favorite here?
I don't know about that. I think he's going to look around, but I don't think he's settled in his visits after those first two. The other thing to think about there is I think I read something in some of the reporting done by the state over the weekend that he's really not in any hurry to make up his mind. I guess he could make up his mind, but I thought I saw a date attached to Josh Belk's process. August the 1st was when he would like to have his decision made by. Might even have been July 1st, but it seemed to me like he was going to be a little bit deliberate with what's going on there. And, you know, you got to kind of look at this young man, how he was at college for a little bit, and now he's fixing to make his next move. And I think his next move kind of carries a whole lot of weight attached to it, because that would be another situation where if that doesn't work out there, then he would be facing the chance of having to sit out again. So might be okay to scan the field a little bit there for Josh Belk. He took a visit to Georgia. He liked it. I think, you know, South Carolina continues to be in his ear. I still think the matter of having a lawyer involved in all of this, an attorney involved in all this, is very interesting, because it looks like to me a move where they can make sure that all the I's were dotted and their T's yeah. were crossed with compliance in terms of any potential tampering with right. Clemson, to make sure everything was handled above board. And I kind of just shake my head and scratch my head a little bit and say, this is what college football transfers are now all about, especially when the matters of schools getting releases to other schools. You just need to involve the law firms of the world now.
Well, now, hold on now. Certainly the programs themselves use lawyers all the time. I actually don't mind the idea of a player having a true advocate on his side here, because there are a lot of examples of, you know, high school coaches, they have stuff to gain. You know, sometimes the advisors that we see pop up, you know, there is some thought of what they may have to gain here. I mean, you know, you say, well, you know, sometimes a lawyer is about the only place a player can turn to have a true advocate that truly is in it for him, you know, for the player's best interest, right?
Yeah, I'm not denigrating that at all, Brandon. I'm just saying that that's a necessary level of verification. Let's be clear here. I mean, everybody can talk tampering, yes or no, all they want, but a lot of those advisors you speak of, those are the passages of information transactions that happen, you know, without the player being involved at all. I mean, that's how people figure out a lot of these things. That's kind of the basis of how sometimes a lot of these transfer situations happen in high school. It's not the coaches, it's not the representatives of the program that does it, it's the parents, and it's the trainers, and it's everyone else like that. Those are the ones that's figuring out, oh, there's a great opportunity for you at this school, the depth chart looks good at this school, this is how many guys they signed. You know, I just think that sort of thing happens, and I think the necessary step here for a lawyer is just to make sure that there's someone keeping records of when the first contacts were taking place, and you have someone sending documentation with compliance offices as well. You know, again, the Josh Belk story is just, you know, maybe they had the greatest visit in the history of visits earlier this week, late last week. But I just remember, if Josh Belk doesn't show a lot of attention to Georgia in the 2018 cycle, when Georgia was stacking up all the elite recruits it possibly could at defensive tackle, then it makes me wonder how all of a sudden Josh Belk feels a lot different about Georgia, knowing that he'll have to sit out a year anyway before he plays.
I want to finish up in a moment with some good reporting you had from Warren Burrell, the really good-looking defensive back from a school that's produced a lot of big-time talent over the last few years, North Gwinnett. We'll finish with that in a moment. Before that, though, Jeff, tell me how to feel about this, because normally when a five-star prospect includes Georgia in any list of finalists, that's a big deal for us here, and we're talking a lot about it on our Dog Nation Daily as part of Romarlo's Tavern Tell-All. I'm not telling you I'm not excited about Devontae Dobbs making Georgia a member of his top eight. I'm not in any way discrediting that, you know, whatsoever, but I guess I am having a hard time knowing how to feel about it. You know, every time you write about him, you essentially say the same thing. You know, recruiting services list him as an elite tackle. He may be more of an elite guard at the college level. Obviously, I want as many good offensive linemen at Georgia as I can see them stack up. But, you know, I do see a need where Georgia needs true tackles more than it needs guards. I mean, what is the relationship like with Dobbs and Georgia? It seems like, you know, he's obviously another out-of-state guy here. I mean, tell me how to feel about Devontae Dobbs, because right now I'm going to have a hard time sort of deciding, you know, what my mood is about all this.
Yeah, Brandon, that's fair. I mean, you got to think about, I think the really true emphasis here is on tackles in the class of 2019. That's a prospect where you see Georgia has gone in heavy on tackles, where maybe the only interior lineman that they've really went hard after would be Clay Webb, the five-star center out of Alabama, and that's naturally so because he's such a gifted talent, a powerful prospect. But the thing with Georgia and Dobbs is I know that situation a little bit. I know that situation a little bit where I've spoken to his mentors and people close to Dobbs as well as Dobbs. And when he brings up Georgia, the light does come on in his eyes a little bit. He did take an unofficial visit last year, camp with Georgia, camp with Pittman. There was a clear connect there with Pittman and the staff and Devontae Dobbs. And then he came back, I believe it was about a month and a half ago. He took another visit to Georgia, liked it as well on a southern swing, which is what everybody seems to do right now. And, you know, Dobbs is a guy that he keeps being rated as a tackle. But to me, he's about 6'4" and a half and about 300 pounds maybe. And I just don't think that fits what Georgia's looking for in a tackle. Maybe that's one of those swing linemen. We also have to remember the example that Isaiah Wynn set for Georgia, being Georgia's first rounder on the offensive line in quite a long time. And he's an undersized guy around 6'2", 275, 280 when he came out of high school as well. So, you know, Dobbs is a guy, he's got Georgia amongst his top eight. I still think Dobbs will give Georgia an official visit. I think Georgia's kind of up there. And everybody mentions Ohio State, rightfully so with Dobbs as well. Michigan State is actually in his top eight for the Michigan native, but the Wolverines are not. Interesting choices he's made with some of those programs in there. But Georgia, let's just call it a puncher's chance because I think that's what it is. Is Georgia really, you know, is that the offensive tackle the program needs? I think Georgia needs a more of a true offensive tackle. The name Warren McClendon always comes up as well. The UGA legacy out of Brunswick High School. He's been recruited by Georgia and Sam Pittman hard for a lot of years. McClendon down there obviously seems like he's a guy that, you know, has some tendencies. There's a South Carolina connection there with Brian McClendon, his family member as well. He also likes the Florida Gators. While we're kind of circling around the entire offensive tackle spot, there's also Darnell Wright to think about, who is connected very heavily to Penn State and Tennessee comparatively based on reports you see out there. And the other name that, you know, a lot of people I think have drawn a bead on is maybe that kind of dark horse guy for Georgia at offensive tackle in the class of 2019. That would be Xavier Truss out of Rhode Island. Yeah. That would be a Rhode Island pipeline being built there by Sam Pittman. Now, he's that guy that's about 6'7" and a half and about 350 pounds that will set the bar very highly on any size meter that Bulldog fans out there are looking for. It kind of reminds me a lot of the same body type, maybe about an inch shorter than Daniel Falele last year from IMG Academy, who ended up in Minnesota of all places. Australia to Minnesota, that's got to be a funny documentary one day and everything else. That's the offensive tackle kind of look right there. I would be remiss if I didn't also mention the name Darius Thomas. He is a highly rated tackle out of Arkansas, the nation's number 18 offensive tackle. You're talking about another top 200 player in the state of in the nation. And everybody starts thinking about, hold on a minute, Jeff, Arkansas. Those young people in Arkansas know all about Sam Pittman. He has decided he's going to have a busy official visit season, and Georgia will get an official visit from Darius Thomas. He's about 6'6", about 305, nation's number 168 overall prospect on the 24/7 sports composite. Going to give UGA an official visit as well, and that's a tackle, especially on your program, Brandon, that we haven't talked a whole lot about yet.
Yeah, you're right, Jeff. That'll be one to watch for sure. I've kept you long, and I apologize. Let me squeeze in one more quick final thing, because Jeff Purcell brings this up in the Facebook comment section about Warren Burrell. He says he really wants to see UGA get Burrell. You've done a great job reporting this story for a while, including here over the last couple of days as a part of the Centel Intel. And it's not just Burrell. He's got, at least two other defensive back teammates from North Gwinnett who are also getting a lot of major college attention right now. As a way of sort of plugging what's in the Centel Intel, give us a quick update on Burrell and kind of where things stand right now.
Yeah, Burrell, it's very interesting. A lot of these guys, Brandon, are just gas pedal recruits right now. When this official visit window, where you can take your official visits up until, I believe, the last weekend. There's some very technical term for it in the new bylaw, but it's the Sunday prior to the final Wednesday in June. These recruits can take their official visits before the new dead period window comes down. But Warren Burrell, he's got an official visit set this weekend for Tennessee. The following weekend after that, he has an official set for NC State, I believe.
Okay.
And then later on this week, no, I got that mixed up. His next one is Florida. And then later on that month, in the month of June, he's got an official visit set to NC State. So three officials, he only gets five. He still likes a lot of things about Georgia, though. He's been to Georgia just about as much as any school he's been to go see. He's a guy, Brandon. He kind of reminds me a lot of like a tenacious, very mechanic-driven, mindset-driven, instinctive player like Chris Smith was in the class of 2018. I saw him go mano a mano, a lot of reps with Ramel Keaton, the 6'3" receiver out of Marietta, who's headed to Tennessee. Rated just as a three-star cornerback, but there's some interesting little things in there. Like Warren Burrell actually has a top seven, but Auburn is outside the top seven, and somehow he's had a great visit recently to Auburn, where he's thinking maybe it's a top eight or a top 7.5 or top 7.75, whatever you want to call it. And then Warren also has a very interesting nugget in there about a connection to a family member at the University of Georgia. He has a immediate family member that actually teaches at the university in the School of Social Work. He says that Mel Tucker says he's a fit for the Georgia defense because of the way he plays aggressively and likes to get into receivers' faces. And a couple more connections there. He would like to play with Andrew Booth. He would love to play with Jalen Perry. And he had some very interesting commentary about the prospects of lining up in the same secondary one day with Jalen Perry, who would be the prized cornerback commitment right now for Georgia in the 2019 class.
It's a great read at DogNation.com. I hope people will check it out, and anything else that's coming down the pipe from Jeff here over the course of the next couple of days. Jeff, thanks for being here, a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Tell All here on Dog Nation Daily. We'll look forward to speaking to you hopefully a little later on in the week, and you have yourself a good week in between now and then.
Yes, sir, everybody. Have yourself a good week.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really interesting stuff from Jeff Sintel there. And, you know, we were talking about Devontae Dobbs a moment ago, the five-star offensive lineman who includes Georgia in his top eight. Is he a tackle? Is he a guard? And if he's a guard, how much does Georgia really need him, given the fact that Georgia has probably locked up more elite interior offensive linemen than, I guess, any program in the country? And, you know, one of the names that Jeff mentions there as the potential true tackle is a guy like Xavier Truss, who is not, you know, necessarily, I would think, for, you know, people around the region, an incredible household name. He's out of Rhode Island, but it's a big example here of how Georgia, from a scouting standpoint, is just going after this a little different than some other programs are. You know, you make the same comparison you made to Wanya Morris here, who, you know, Mike Johnson, my partner in the afternoons, you know, Mike has said he loves that Wanya Morris film. He loves what he does as an offensive lineman. But if you compare a guy like Morris to Truss, and Jeff gave you his specs a moment ago, he's like 6'7". You know, what, 330, 340, something along those lines. I mean, I'm just a much bigger offensive lineman than Wanya Morris. That is what Georgia likes. Now, Georgia likes to get them and then slim them down a bit once they get on campus. But Georgia's been pretty clear here that it prefers the very tall, really long arms, very big, well north of 300-pound guys. That's what Georgia's recruiting. And so even though the Truss ranks lower than Morris as a prospect, Morris is a five-star guy now. Georgia still seems to be prioritizing bigger recruits, even if they're not as highly rated on the recruiting rankings. All right, SEC Through begins here now. And, you know, SEC spring meetings starting Destin this week. We'll obviously talk more about that throughout the week when there are things to talk about. One of the guys that's there for us is Mike Griffith. Mike also had some really interesting reporting to SECCountry.com over the weekend about the future of Darren Kirkland, the Tennessee linebacker. There had been some rumors out there that Kirkland might transfer, maybe still will. But according to Mike's reporting there, it seems like there have been some meetings taking place between Kirkland and Tennessee that at least leaves the door open for him to stay. Now, I don't know anything about this situation, but there is a bias that I sort of have in situations like this. New coaches like fresh, clean slates. And I think that if Kirkland's not a part of Jeremy Pruitt's first team at Tennessee, it tells me more about Kirkland than it does Tennessee's either needed linebacker or anything about Jeremy Pruitt. You know, these coaches, there's just an there's a bit of a motivation to say anybody that's not going to 100% fit into what we're doing here, you're sort of better off without them than with them, because, A, you get to sort of plant the seed of, hey, look how hard we have to climb to get back to respectability. Look how much we lost, and look how, you know, much of a mess I had to clean up here. Coaches just like sort of doing that kind of stuff. And so, you know, Tennessee desperately needs players. If Pruitt's willing to let Kirkland walk out the door, then, as I said, it may say more about Kirkland than it does Pruitt. But make no mistake about this, Tennessee is not a loaded roster by any means. You know, Kirkland's one of the few players that a lot of SEC fans outside of Knoxville have heard of. You know, the thought of having to take on a West Virginian week one, you know, third Saturday in October against Alabama, to say nothing of having to come to Athens to play UGA. Doing that without Darren Kirkland's potentially very, very hard here. So this is going to be a story to continue to watch, and pretty good reporting from Mike Griffith on that, about the door maybe still being open for Kirkland to come back there. Speaking of good reporting, there was also some good reporting from Trey Wallace at the Read Optional, which is a good blog that's broken really a lot of news here over the last few months or so. And they caught up with Maurice Smith, excellent former Georgia star, who was really the defensive MVP for Georgia in 2016, came to Georgia as a graduate transfer from Alabama. And what Smith talked to the Read Optional about was just how harrowing that experience was, that once he announced that he was going to transfer from Alabama, he wasn't really allowed in the Alabama facilities anymore. And I guess there's even the insinuation that he wasn't even able to get any food. He had to have like food snuck to him from the Alabama cafeteria because he was sort of in limbo for a while there, and there was this SEC rule that had to be kind of overcome for him to get with Georgia, and ultimately all works out, and Smith goes on to have a very good season for Georgia, and the rest, as they say, is history. This is a tough situation here, and frankly, from my perspective, it does not paint Alabama in the most favorable light. And, you know, once again, kind of the same way here when it comes to some of this transfer stuff. When you're looking for an opportunity to negative recruit against Alabama, these quotes from Maurice Smith, I think, become that opportunity to say, if you go to Alabama, be afraid that you're going to end up being held hostage if things don't work out for you there. I think that the direction that college football is moving is towards a more liberal transfer policy. And for the programs who are slow in adopting it, I think there's a chance to really hammer them on the recruiting trail. I think it would be just desserts here for Saban to get hammered over some of the things that Maurice Smith says. Cody Clark in our Facebook comment section a moment ago mentioned Zach Pickens, the five-star strong side defensive end from out of South Carolina. He does choose the Gamecocks here. I guess there was some hope that maybe Georgia could get involved here, but South Carolina ultimately wins the commitment. And this is an example of something that Will Muschamp is doing right now that a lot of his, you know, contemporaries in the SEC East are just not doing. Dan Mullen at Florida is not getting five-star defensive linemen right now. Tennessee, you know, had some success. J.J. Peterson, an example of this, the 2018 class, but I would say the Pickens even better prospect than J.J. Peterson is. This is an example of Muschamp quietly now, not getting a lot of credit from a lot of opposing SEC fans necessarily yet, but he's building something pretty interesting there at South Carolina. Not enough to be a legit threat to Georgia in 2018 or in 2019 once Zach Pickens starts playing. At least not as of yet do I view the Gamecocks as a legit threat to UGA. But has South Carolina got more momentum as a program than the other programs in the SEC East, including Tennessee and Florida? I believe they absolutely do. And then one more real quick story, then we'll get into this more this afternoon on SEC Country Live. Will Muschamp has also sort of weighed in on the Dacreon Joyner situation. You may remember Tommy Luganbill, the ESPN analyst, at one point in time had said that Joyner, the incoming freshman quarterback, ought to switch positions and play wide receiver. That's what he's going to do. Brian McClendon was in Atlanta at a speaking event. He said he views Joyner as a quarterback. Will Muschamp has also recently weighed on this as well, saying for now he still views Joyner as a quarterback. The controversy here is, at least from my perspective, is do you sometimes tell a kid that he can play quarterback at your school, and then when he gets there, you start figuring out a way to like get him to move and sort of see with his own eyes why another position is better? That's a brand of recruiting I don't love. As a fan, I'm personally proud that Georgia doesn't really do things that way. Trey Bishop is an example of that Jeff mentioned before. Now, his legal trouble notwithstanding, you know, Auburn, I think, was selling him a bill of goods with the notion, hey, come here and be a quarterback. Georgia was rightly saying, in our program, you're a defensive back. In this case, I think the honesty was the best policy. I don't know what Joyner's future is, but if a lot of people are telling him he should play wide receiver, odds are that's probably the best position for him. We'll make that your SEC through. All right, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, I want to do the next installment of our Dog Day Q&A. But if you'll permit me for a moment, I need to set this up because y'all know, and some of you can reach out to me on social media about this, that I love these college football preseason magazines, the Athlon, the Lindy's, the Street and Smith's, to a lesser extent, the Phil Steele, although I guess I probably will get that one in a couple of weeks when it hits the newsstands. I just like this kind of stuff. I don't always love everything I read inside of them, but I do like the magazines themselves. And I was looking over the weekend at the Athlon Sports SEC Preview magazine, and they were sort of describing Georgia, who they have ranked very high for 2018. But a remark about the 2017 season kind of caught my eye here. I think we have this. I think we can show it to you. This is what the Athlon Sports SEC Preview said about the upcoming season. They say, if it's possible for a 13-2 season to be a disappointment, the Bulldogs' 2017 season qualifies. And it sort of goes on to say about all the things that Georgia did do, but, you know, obviously came short of winning a national championship. But it's that word right there in the middle of that quote that sort of gets my attention. Disappointment? Do you honestly think that the 2017 season for Georgia is a disappointment? That's actually the subject of our Dog Day Q&A today. We'll do it a bit here on the regular broadcast. We'll do more of it on video in a moment. Do you think the 2017 season for Georgia was a success or a disappointment? I'd love to have you kind of weigh in on that, because for me, this is something I feel very passionate about. For me, the Georgia season was undoubtedly a success. And I don't discredit the you know, what happened there at the end of the season and coming that close to winning a national championship. There's no guarantee that Georgia's going to be back there in that same spot again this season or really anytime soon. But overall, for me, the good of the 2017 season overwhelmed the disappointment at the end of the year to Alabama. And y'all heard the show the next day after that game. We were crestfallen here on this program. There's no other way to say that. But when I think of 2017, I think of the Rose Bowl. I think of Dog Nation retaliation in the SEC championship. I think about 41-0, 42-7. I think about South Bend. I think about the resurrection of a program that's got great things coming up. For me, it's a smashing success. On Facebook, Kais Hagen says it was an amazing season, great football, and I kind of agree with that. Troy Batten says he thinks it was a success. Miriam Martin Corbin says it was both, and to a degree, I guess it was both, but for me, it's the success of the season that I'll remember a lot more than the overall disappointment. Richard Smith says, disappointment? It was success more than a disappointment. It was 80-20. That's about the ratio I would agree with. About four-fifths of it was great. Roe Hawkins says, no disappointment. I think it was a very, very good season. It can only get better, better, and better. And I guess that's also part of this as well. It's the fact that for me, it does seem like a foreshadowing of more success to come. Now, if ultimately over the course of the next couple of years that doesn't happen, then we'll look back on this maybe a little bit differently as an opportunity that was missed. But let's face it, as Georgia continues to compile talent the way that it is, I think most of us are rightly optimistic about what the future is going to hold. And so if you're listening to us right now on the radio or in a podcast version, you can check out our video channels where we'll keep this conversation going a bit more. You can also weigh in with me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. And for those of you that do listen to the show and you want to talk about anything we talk about here on our program, I think that's a really good way to interact with me at Dog Nation Daily on Twitter. And you can share your thoughts about anything involving Georgia football and any of the topics here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. I also had some fun speaking of Twitter over the weekend with the Florida Gators here. We like to do that from time to time because we believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. And 151 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville for the world's largest outdoor cocktail party and gets themselves another one of the Florida Gators. That's what we believe is going to happen. And that's why we do the Gator Hater Countdown here every single day here on Dog Nation Daily, because we think that's the rivalry that matters most to the Georgia Bulldogs. Y'all have yourselves a great day. We'll see you tomorrow for more Dog Nation Daily.